summary by W. Gordon Brown of Science and Health's seventh chapter, Physiology, is the outcome of a consecrated study of this chapter by a group of students in London. As in the case of the preceding chapters, the text is approached from the standpoint of the capitalized, synonymous terms for God which permeate the book as a whole and which determine its divinely scientific meaning. The student's fundamental concern, therefore, is with the meanings and values of these terms, revealing to him the spiritual reality of his universe. As discussed on the tape which introduces the series, the terms are considered not selectively, but as they flow together in harmony in the text's own spiritual order. For then it is that out of this harmony and unity is born to the student's spiritual sense the specific meaning and value of each individual term, both with the category of the seven, of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, love, and the four of the Word, Christ, Christianity, science. The rule, therefore, is that we continue to approach the text honestly, in its consistency and wholeness, never taking anything out of context.
Let's have Science and Health open then at page 165. Just as the first five chapters in their spiritual and scientific order, ending with animal magnetism unmasked, graciously prepare us for the Christly standpoint of the sixth chapter, Science, Theology, Medicine, so the sixth chapter leads inevitably to the seventh, Physiology. The immediate outcome of unmasking animal magnetism, which takes place in the measure we accede to the teachings of chapters 1, 2, 3, and 4, is the natural and spontaneous revelation of truth itself in individual consciousness. This means that the accent with the sixth chapter, as we found when studying it, is on the whole stupendous idea of spiritual and scientific translation in contrast to destruction and death, just as was proved in the life work of Jesus. The leaven of truth, which in the words of Paul, cited at the beginning of the sixth chapter, is neither received of man nor taught us personally, comes to human thought through what the text calls the scientific translation of immortal mind. The word leaven is from the root meaning to raise. This is the coming to each one of us individually of one universal mind of Christ, raising the whole lump of human consciousness, the entire body of world thought from the dead, even as yeast raises and gives life to an apparently inert lump of dough. To represent this great fact of life, as we read at the opening of the sixth chapter, the discovery of Christian Science in 1866 raised Mary Baker Eddy from her deathbed. When science, in the first part of the sixth chapter, is found to be true theology, in the second part, the Theos, Logos, or God himself speaking, and therefore, in the words of the text, to be the religion of love, science, the religion of love, It medicines the entire body of humanity in the third part, healing and translating it out of sin, disease, and death, that is, from mortality to immortality. Hence the note on which the sixth chapter closes, or where it merges into the seventh chapter, when this corruptible shall have put on incorruption, and this mortal shall have put on immortality, divine science, the absolute oneness that is of the human with the divine, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Turning to the two complementary phases of translation taught on pages 115 to 116 of Science and Health, the emphasis with the sixth chapter is on the first of these, on spiritual discovery, divine revelation, Christ, the divine message from God to men speaking to the human consciousness, in other words, on the scientific translation of immortal mind. The emphasis with the seventh chapter is in consequence on the second of the two phases, the scientific translation of mortal mind, for it is where this corruptible is being shown, being told how actually to put on incorruption, and this mortal to put on immortality. Thus the revelation in the sixth chapter of the true idea of body, one all-harmonious Christ, body of mankind, translates the physiological concept of body in the seventh chapter, and the result is the note on which the seventh chapter closes, that's over on page 200, where Jesus Christ and him crucified yields to Jesus Christ and him glorified. A mortal or death sense of body is represented as having been translated into an immortal or resurrection sense of body. Armed with the idea of this sinless resurrection body and how to achieve it, thought can then move forward with footsteps of truth in the eighth chapter and begin to experience this translation in day-by-day experience. Then, in the ninth chapter, creation, in consequence, a totally new sense of universe is one. So, to the seventh chapter, physiology. To the glorious proposition of humanity translated apparently from a state of corruption, corrupt from a root meaning to break, to one of incorruption, of unity, harmony, undividedness, that is, from death to life. Hence the Bible verses on which the chapter is based take no thought for your mortal life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your mortal body, what ye shall put on. Is not the life of immortality, that is, more than meat, and the body, the one universal Christ body, more than raiment? In other words, we are bidden to put on immortality and incorruption as our raiment. Thus he sent his word, the knowledge of what body truly is, and healed them, and delivered them from the destructions inherent in the great human build-up of false physiological good and evil knowledge. So what is physiology? from physio, nature, plus logi, discourse. Physiology is that branch of biology dealing with the processes, activities, and phenomena of life and living organisms. The study of the functions of the organs and parts during life as distinct from anatomy. The organic processes collectively of an organism or part. In other words, physiology signifies a state of living wholeness and interdependence in contrast to anatomical dissection and death. An organism is an organic whole made up of organs separate in function but mutually dependent. A complex structure with parts so integrated that their relations to one another are governed by their relations to the whole. Well, if we translate that spiritually out of matter and dissectable parts, what a symbol we have of life itself in divine science, the very science of being itself, unfragmentable, anatomically, therefore immune from sin and death. It reminds us, I think, of our attitude in this study to the text of Science and Health, defined elsewhere as the body of principle, namely its living, unfragmented wholeness and unity, because we are taking nothing out of context. You see, a symbol can be translated. Only counterfeit ends in death. Hence the need to translate body out of apparent physiological organization and the possibilities of anatomical dissection and schism. In the Bible, the holy tabernacle which the children of Israel carried with them through the wilderness in their transit from Egypt to the Promised Land was just this symbol of principle's own, perfectly structured, interdependent, non-schismatic, and therefore living body. Well, the opening paragraphs of the chapter depict physiology mythologically as one of the apples from the tree of knowledge. Physiology, then, is one of the material sciences. Involved in it is the false family tree of genetic inheritances, and therefore, in modern microbiology, the serpentine coil or spiral of the so-called DNA code. What we are concerned with biblically, then, is the mythical Garden of Eden, the serpent, and Adam and Eve, who, under the influence of the serpent, become as gods instead of being the image and likeness of God. All this postulates fallen, sinning, dying humanity, which, having eaten of the tree of material knowledge, that is, the tree of death, needs to be restored to the tree of life. The issue, therefore, is between true and false knowledge, or true and false education. Science and immortality on the one hand, the mythology of mortality on the other. Science, the revelation of the eternal, infinite self-knowledge of mind, versus mythology, or the build-up from a state of initial ignorance of ever vaster and more complicated biological and psychological information. The one is typified by the tree of life, the other by the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the serpent's tree of death. Both trees occupy exactly the same position in the midst of the Garden of Eden, implying really that there is only one tree. The one involves symbol, the other counterfeit. And salvation depends on the translation of symbol into the reality of life itself, the reality which lies behind the symbol. The tree of knowledge is known biblically as the accursed tree, being the tree or the cross on which Jesus was supposedly crucified. But through the crucifixion and resurrection, Jesus achieved the translation of consciousness from a state of physiological mortal knowledge to the divine self-knowledge, the self-revelation of the science of mind, which is life. Hence, in the closing paragraph of the physiology chapter, as we've noted, Jesus Christ and him crucified yields to Jesus Christ and him glorified. And so it has to be with our own individual experience. Now, the keynote of the chapter as a whole seems to be sounded, as we found, on page 171 in the paragraph entitled Paradise Regained. Eating the apple physiology, stuffing himself with knowledge regarding his supposedly organic life and mortal body, mortal man is represented as having lost his paradise. Disobedience to divine principle casts him out of the Garden of Eden, which in the form of the tree of life is this very paradise. As the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, of course, Eden is the symbol of mortal body. So we read in this paragraph on page 171, the key of divine science reopens for mortal man the gates of paradise which human beliefs have closed, and how as a result man finds himself. He finds himself unfallen, upright, pure, and free, the way he has always been in Christ or truth. In other words, to regain paradise is to awaken to the fact that in divine science, paradise was never lost. Man never filled himself up with false physiological knowledge at the expense of the science of life, and so degenerated from symbol to counterfeit. The human is not mortal, but immortal. Therefore, like Jesus, it can accomplish complete translation. So, what, in purely practical terms, is paradise? Well, the text tells us. Paradise lost, we realize from the chapter, is the loss, supposedly, of conscious control over the body. Hence, paradise itself is the experience of this conscious control. Paradise regained is the apparent regaining of this control. But this is achieved only through the scientific understanding that never, in the first place, was it taken away. What would constitute normal, rightful control of the body being supposedly taken away from man, or man being cut off from the tree of life? If he believed that it was his control, his own psychical and physiological control by a mind or will of his own over a personal body of his own. In other words, that he was literally a god, little g, instead of being the reflection of God, capital G. The chapter teaches, therefore, that such control is mind's, God's control, and not man's, and that it is exercised over mind's own body of divine self-knowledge, which is man. Man in science as the idea of God. Control of the body, man, can never be taken away from the body's Christ mind. Humanly speaking, we are awakening in science to the control of our own God mind over its own God body. This control is always conscious and voluntary, never psychologically unconscious or involuntary. There are nearly twice as many references to the term mind in physiology as to any other synonym, just as in the category of the four, the use of the term science vastly outweighs the other three. It was the same in the case of science, theology, medicine. Why? Because the textbook's concern at this point is with mind science, the science of mind healing. Mind's own knowledge of its own infinitude, constituting its own body over which it has conscious dominion and control. All right, then let us glance down the paragraphs of physiology's 35 pages, focusing our thought all the time on the flow of the capitalized synonymous terms for God, signifying the divinity part of the text as being in supreme control of the uncapitalized humanity part, and therefore ridding humanity of belief in mortality so that the crucified gives way to the glorified and the tree of knowledge to the tree of life. Paragraph 1 there on page 165, physiological knowledge blinds the eyes of mortals to man's God-given dominion over the earth, that is, his God-given control over the body. Men, in consequence, believe they are gods, instead of understanding that they are reflections of God. And briefly, the rest of page 165, the fruits of this mortal knowledge, these man-made material theories, which lose man his paradise, come as a multiplication of diseases, of man being at the mercy of non-intelligent matter, of his mind being supposedly encased in a material brain, instead of his mind being the immortal and infinite Christ mind. Page 166, the chapter's first capitalized terms come in the final paragraph on this page with its three references to mind. The message all the way down the page contrasts the workings of mind, little m, with mind, capital M. On line 3, as a man thinketh, so is he. Mind, capitalized here because it begins a sentence, is all that feels, acts, or impedes action. Ignorant of this, lines 6 and 7, conscious control over the body is lost. So there we have it, paradise lost. But this is all belief only. Just belief, belief, belief. Mortals believing, therefore experiencing what they do not really have either to believe or to experience. From the erring, inharmonious human mind, line 15, arises the inharmonious body. The answer lies, line 26, where the three references to mind begin, with one harmonious divine mind asserting its mastery that is its absolute dominion and control over sin, disease, and death. So that, line 29, man is found to be harmonious and immortal. He hasn't got to be made so by reason of his having first fallen into a state of sinful inharmony. The first reference to principle in the chapter, coming at the top of page 167 there. This all-controlling mind is not a corporeal God with a personal will or volition, but an infinite divine principle which heals. Mind reveals itself to be impersonal principle, which therefore applies to all men. By reason of this principle of one all-controlling mind, we attain the science of healing. And this means that soul existence takes the place of sense existence. Mind, principle, life. Soul existence, living in divine science, living above and correcting corporeal sense. Life in divine science is life one and indivisible, where the human lives in the embrace of the divine and is never lost therefrom. This determines our health, our longevity, and our Christianity. New capitalized term there, 167.10. Our Christianity is our, all humanity's, universal Christ body. Let's try to feel the music of the terms and their individual tones as they flow together harmoniously through the text. This Christianity body of ours, which does not serve two masters, but is where we all together love God supremely, line 19, and it is the body of spirit, line 18, which has the power of spirit. To love spirit supremely is to be the body of the spirit of Christianity, to be the Christly spirit of love instead of lusting after the flesh and dying generation after generation. Lusting after the flesh, line 20. In thus not taking a halting or halfway position, line 23, man's divine mind, the mind of Christ in Christianity, governs the body scientifically. But this involves radical reliance on the health, the wholeness of truth itself. It is impossible, line 27, to gain control over the body and therefore regain paradise in any other way. And 168, line 2, this is the standard of the character of true manhood in Christian Science. And to put any weight whatever into the scale of matter, line 29, what is it? Line 7, as by the use of drugs, etc., is, as far as our practical experience is concerned, to take away from the scale of mind. This is the law of mind relating to man's perfection, the authority, the command, the will of mind. It casts disease out of the human mind first and out of the body secondly, in a process of chemicalization. 168 there, 31. That is, in a change of human mentality. So, we begin to understand in science the control of mind over body. Because the origin of disease is mental, disease is only really cured by the divine mind, not by matter, drugs, or mortal mind's belief in the power of drugs. Science is what mind knows regarding the diseaseless perfection of its own body, which is man. This power of mind is expressed in the harmonious action of truth, life, and love. 169.27. Now this is the ninth reference in the textbook so far to this particular combination of terms, truth, life, and love. The last one was on page 137, where Christ was defined as the spirit of truth, life, and love, we remember, which heals mentally. Indeed, truth, life, and love are the very Christ body of mind itself, full of power and harmony. Truth, or Christ, made up of the infinitude of the universal individuality of life and love, which constitutes Christianity. And so we see on 169.31 there that the power of the law of mind is Christian power as against the anti-Christian power of the drug. On 172 at the top, we come suddenly upon this rather obscure statement that truth is not the basis of theogony. And theogony in the dictionary is defined as the genealogy of gods. Ye shall be as gods, said the serpent to Adam and Eve, if you eat the apple of physiological knowledge. And the countless generations of subsequent little gods will all have genealogies and genetic inheritances deriving from this original eating of the tree of false knowledge. But the mind which is truth, not mortal mind which is error, is what truly generates man and is the source of all that he inherits. Truth, in its health or wholeness, wherein is no fallen man, no God's little g, no departure of parts from the whole, no error, that's the basis of man's true genealogy. His family tree is the tree of life, not a biological tree of death. That his descent is from spirit, line 6, and not from matter, is the principle of his harmony. And this reveals to him his true Christian economy. Line 7 again. Economy, defined in part as household management, that is, the properly balanced economic workings of the system or body of Christian ideas, line 8, which is man. In this divine economy, truth is self-sustaining and eternal, line 12. And its demands for self-sustenance reach the body through the body's mind, line 15. Hence, in accordance with the Bible verse on which the chapter as a whole is founded, Jesus interpreted man's true economic needs when he bade, take no thought for your life, what you shall eat or what you shall drink. Man, in truth, is economically self-sustained because he is whole, not dependent on anything outside of himself. The kingdom of God is within him. No wonder then, on 170:22 there, the one question to be considered is spiritual causation as it relates to human progress. Spiritual causation pertaining to the supremacy of spirit, to the interwoven wholeness of the garment of truth, there on lines 26-27, not to the Pandora box of a physical organization involving matter as cause, matter as a creator with its paganism and lust. So on 171, we regain paradise. The question of spiritual causation becomes a closed question in the margin there, line 14, and no longer an open one once the key of divine science has reopened the gates of paradise and we discern the way in through Christ truth. Man in Christ, that is, in truth, never fell. This is the divine science of man. Mind never ceased to control its own universe, including man. 171:12. This demonstrable science destroys the foundations of death. Never having departed from truth, never having eaten the physiological apple, never having disobeyed his principle, never having claimed to have a mind power of his own, man does not surely die. Operating in this way, line 17, he does not mistake his origin and nature, does not think he has combined matter and spirit, does not believe spirit is sifted through matter, etc., or that the image of infinite mind is subject to non-intelligence. Man, the intellectual, the moral, the spiritual, is subject to the mind, the intelligence of which he is the image. Mind, not matter, line 27, is everywhere present, intelligence and life. Mind, not matter, is all cause and all law. Over now to 172, where the topic is godless evolution, the supposed chain of material being, line 11, comparable surely with that theogony or genealogy of gods which featured on page 170. In the divine science of spirit, where God and man are inseparable, there is no godless evolution, no fall of man, no human species rising from matter upwards, no build-up of biological and physiological knowledge, in modern terms, no serpentine DNA spiral, no genetic code of laws. Instead, the eternal chain of existence is uninterrupted by a sinful, disobedient, willful fall, and therefore is wholly spiritual. And so on line 19, man is the image and likeness of spirit in contrast to mortals, equated here with mortal mind, the belief that soul is in sense and life in matter, in other words, with physiological organisms. This old sense of man must be put off for the new. If soul were in sense, man's identity would indeed be lost. He would have lost his paradise or his control over the body. But as we find in the margin on line 25 there, identity is not lost. The tree of life is not lost, submerged, absorbed in the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Man is not a biological organism that can be broken up into parts that can in turn be lost from one another. If he were such an organism, then in that case, and now we are at 173:8, in that case truth would be reduced to the level of error. Christ would have become fallen man, and we would have a completely false sense of individualization there in the marginal heading. Man is only truly individual when he reflects the indivisible wholeness of truth. And accordingly, the next paragraph resolves the dualism of spirit and matter. Spirit is positive, matter is the negation of spirit. Spirit cannot be obtained through matter. If spirit did pass through matter, as in the supposed creation of material man, spirit would be destroyed, all would be matter. But spirit is the positive, indestructible reality of all things. And the paragraphs that follow there concern anatomy, physiology itself, and phrenology as some of the idols of civilization, line 30 at the bottom, more fatal to health and longevity than the idols of barbarism. Why? Because the latter have at least some faith in a supreme governing intelligence. Now, true civilization, 174:9, in which footsteps of thought rise above material standpoints, is promoted by angels of his presence. That is, by whoever opens the way in Christian Science and marks out the path for generations yet unborn. The thunder of Sinai and the Sermon on the Mount, that is, the law and the gospel, foster this true idea of civilization, rebuking all error, all belief in fallen man, and proclaiming the kingdom of heaven on earth. Truth, then, with its true idea of civilization, is today revealed. All we have to do is to practice it. And this practice at the bottom there of page 174 includes preventing images of disease from taking form in the mortal human mind, which is the cause of all disease. Whereas the immortal divine mind, line 32, is its cure. In immortal divine mind, of course, only images of health, that is, of truth, take form. And pages 175 and 176, they hint symbolically at the difference between what life is like prior to eating the physiological apple and afterwards. For example, 175:6, in old times, that is, before partaking of the apple, whoever heard of dyspepsia, cerebro, spinal meningitis, hay fever, or rose cold? In the days of our forefathers, people had less time for selfishness, etc. And on line 27 at the bottom, in order to clinch the analogy, our ancestors were as innocent as Adam before he ate the fruit of false knowledge. And again at the top of 176, line 1, the action of mortal mind on the body was not so injurious before inquisitive modern Eves took up the study of medical works, that is, partook of medical knowledge. As a result of all this knowledge, line 19, mortal mind becomes the worst foe of the body, while divine mind is its best friend. When, line 7, the human mind is not stuffed with medical knowledge regarding its body, then the body acts normally and freely in obedience to nature. Indeed, when knowledge is to us mind's own self-knowledge in science, then we shall cease to believe that body is mortal, and the mortal appearance of body will then behave naturally and harmoniously without our having to think about it. Line 17, mortal mind is miasma. That is, mortal mind is a noxious, poisonous, putrefying swamp, the atmosphere of which mortals breathe with such injurious results. Fear of the miasma of mortal mind, it says, loads with disease the air of Eden. So, all disease is the result of education. 176.25. That is, of eating the fruit of the tree of knowledge. One disease is no more real than another. All types, acute, chronic, malignant, yield to truth. Why? Because truth is the very body of divine mind, which knows only its own health and wholeness. How wonderful, 177.5, that divine mind's healing power and absolute control of the body is destined to be to us as certain as the evidence of our own existence. Now, the second paragraph there on 177 is all about mortal mind, matter, mortal body, which, as we know, counterfeit the reality of mind, spirit, and soul. Mortal mind and body are one. Body, which is matter, is but a false concept of mortal mind. Out of its false knowledge, mortal mind builds its own mental and physical superstructure. Superstructure, that which rises above the surface of consciousness, of which the material body is the grosser portion. And this erroneous theory of life and intelligence in matter is represented in the scriptural allegory. We are now at 177.15, by Adam error, supposedly naming, that is, giving identity to, all that is material. This accounts mythically for matter's apparent properties, qualities, and forms. But all this naming is a lie, the opposite of the activity of truth. In truth, all properties, qualities, forms, all effects, all laws are those of spirit, not matter. So physiological causes and effects and their so-called laws are wholly of the nature of belief. What mortal mind believes generally in a majority sense determines what takes place specifically in a minority sense. And this is illustrated in the text by the case of the dose of poison in the sick room being swallowed by mistake, that is, in the belief that it would in fact do the patient good. So we come again on 178, line 8, to the subject of heredity, with which, as we know, cellular biology is so much concerned today. The predisposing cause of disease, that is, the beforehand, the unconscious or prenatal cause, and the exciting cause, that is, when something is suddenly roused to the surface of consciousness, are both equally mental. The remote cause connects past mortal thoughts with present, and therefore it has priority. For example, the fright of a mother prior to the birth of her child might produce in the child chronic deformity. But all this is of the nature of belief only, because no such belief obtains in science. The case is healed by divine mind, by what mind knows its for its own formations to be in truth and as truth. The understanding of Christian Science, line 23, which is what all this teaching is, of course, frees us from belief in heredity. Understanding spiritually the status of immortal being, what man's being is prior to the supposed fall, this disarms sin of its imaginary power to transmit in man an irrevocable genetic code and to determine the workings of this code throughout his life. Now, the understanding of Christian Science, which is what all this is, comes only, says the text, from taking up the cross and following Christ in the daily life. We're at the top of 179, line 3. Which means overcoming the tree of death and, of course, being resurrected, as we shall see in the final paragraph as of the chapter. Well, continuously the terms are science in relation to mind. In the second paragraph on 179, the everywhere present science of mind is truth, which has power, namely the truth power which heals. And this science, of course, provides us with a true spiritual education, in contrast to false physiological education. Coming down that page, treatises on anatomy, on physiology itself, and health, line 21, the reading of medical works, etc., all signify eating the apple of material knowledge, and they promote sickness and disease. Line 15. You can even educate a healthy horse so far in physiology that he will take cold without his blanket. And there are other such examples, and we come over the page to 180, line 2, where we learn that mortal mind, the husbandman of error, mortal mind is the husbandman of error, and should be taught to do the body no harm, and to uproot its false sowing. That is, it's got to be taught to dig up the tree of knowledge. Then we understand in science this wonderful resuscitating law of life, this law of the seed within itself, which bears fruit only after its own kind, as spoken of in Genesis, and which points, of course, to the tree of life. The implication, once more, seems to be that of meeting man's true economic needs. So again, line 12. All causation is mind. The mind, now, which is divine love, line 23, and therefore which contains within it no element of fear. Fear obtains only in the human mind, which governs its phenomenon, the body, with this emotion, and so produces disease. But understanding all things, this ever-present mind governs man, and man in turn knows, of course, that with this divine mind of his all things are possible. This divine mind of his, and not a human mind. And this living, healing truth is the very science of divine mind, as taught and demonstrated by Jesus, line 29. In fact, what we man really are is living truth itself, as found in the science of mind. This living truth, this divine truth, is, line 32, truth which in its potency reduces inflammation, dissolves tumors, cures organic disease. Why? Because truth is the mind which is love, in which there is no element of warfare causing inflammation, no build up of fear taking the form of a tumor. Mind, 181.1, is not only the source, but also the condition of all existence. And because of this, it is spirit. Spirit speaking for itself. Spirit bearing fruit only after its own kind. Spirit which cannot therefore be disordered, but which therefore holds in itself the issues of life, none of which things can be said regarding matter. Now the rest of page 181 seems to be about the means, the use of means other than spiritual means for healing. That is to say, when we are not, line 18, sufficiently spiritual to depend on spirit. And the remedy is so to improve our mental condition until we do attain the understanding of Christian Science. The understanding, for example, that your power, line 12, is not really your power at all, but is God's power. The power of mind, when mind is truth and not error. Other healing means are some form or other of manipulation, physical or mental, involving electricity and magnetism. The dictionary defines manipulation in part as fraudulent mental control. So the need is to love only the science of mind and to be satisfied not with words, but with deeds.